Hi, welcome to the Travel Advice Show. You can find us at traveladviceshow.com. And I'm Chris Newton, one of the co-hosts, and we have great shows from all around, topics from all around the world. And today we have a great show. And my co-host, Jerry Fuller, would you like to introduce our guests and talk about our show today?
I would love to. Today's show is a little bit different than what we've normally had, because today we're going to talk about the best guidebooks that you can get for the European countries and other places. And we are very fortunate to have Cameron Hewitt, who is a senior editor, researcher, and co-author of some of Rick Steves' books. And Cameron, we welcome you. Thank you for being on the show with us.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, thank you, Cameron. Yeah.
To begin with, I'd like to ask a question. If you go into a bookstore, there are thousands of travel books. But as my wife and I, and as I've traveled all over the world in the last several years, I think your book is number one. The Rick Steves Europe Through the Back Door books are the number one. I see them everywhere and with people on planes and gates, boarding planes, and wandering through the cities. Can you tell us a little bit about the books, why he went from television into writing guidebooks?
What's interesting is, actually, it was the other way around. Rick started out doing guidebooks. The first thing he did was actually tours, and he would take small minibus tours, basically as a way to pay his own way over to Europe, so that he could travel free, basically, as a tour guide. And then over time, through all of his travel experiences, he started doing free classes or sometimes other kinds of seminars around the Seattle area to help teach people how to travel. And he would write handout materials for his classes and for his tours. And he began to notice that after his classes, people would be stealing his handout materials. And he sort of put it together that, well, if people really want what I have to say in written form, I might as well give it to them. And self-published his first book, which was Europe Through the Back Door. Sold out very quickly, and the rest is history. Gradually built on that reputation to branch out to several other destinations and so forth. And then it was later, after he'd sort of established himself as a guidebook writer and a tour operator, that he began doing the television shows. So it's sort of interesting that the television grew out of the guidebooks. He's sort of a teacher and a writer first, and that sort of naturally evolved into television personality. And to this day, though, it's interesting because our company has several facets, but they all contribute to each other. So the TV shows, the guidebooks, the tours, everything we do, our website feeds into everything else. So a guidebook researcher might learn something for the book that can also be helpful for the tour. Rick might go, for example, and update a chapter of the guidebook and be inspired to write a script based on the same material for a TV show. So to this day, it all sort of feeds in together.
Do you find that your books appeal to a certain age group more than another, or is it more broad-based, and is it also more international, or is it more North American? Who actually reads the books and buys them, or do you know?
That's a great question. I would say, first of all, they're definitely written for a North American audience, and that's certainly our primary audience, although that's starting to change a little bit. You can buy them in some places in Europe, especially Britain. And believe it or not, we're getting a lot of interest from Australia recently. Apparently there's a television network in Australia that's running Rick's TV shows. And suddenly, a year or two ago, we got a spike of interest of people, customers in Australia, and we pieced it together because this show is on there now. But they're really written for and cater to the North American audience. In terms of an age group, it's kind of interesting. We don't target a certain age group, but we find that age group, there's a certain age group that finds us and that really kind of seems to appreciate our books particularly. It tends to be maybe people around retirement age or a little before retirement age, people in their 50s, 60s, let's say. That's partly, I think, a product of who watches public television. That's where most people learn about Rick, by watching his TV show. So I would imagine that our customer base lines up pretty closely with who watches public television. But also it's people who are at an age where they have the time and the money to be able to travel in Europe, which these days, of course, is getting more and more expensive. But, you know, we don't write our books or cater our books. We're pretty careful not to cater our books to a specific price or age group. We want to make them as generalizable as possible. And I know for sure that there are a lot of even younger people, college-age kids or backpackers, young backpackers, who are using our books. I know this because I see them walking around with them just as much as I see the other age groups. But we seem to have sort of, intentionally or not, kind of targeted this niche of sort of, you know, baby boomers, you could say, kind of retirement age Americans.
I have another question, because I used to work for a company many years ago, because when I was growing up, because about 35 years ago or so, the book that was very popular then was like Europe on $5, $10, et cetera, a day. And I worked for them for 4 years, and now it's Rick Steed's books that definitely have a market. And I wondered, can you tell us how they're written, way that it's done? In other words, do you go over and do complimentary in hotels and things, or do you pay the price? Do they know you're actually representing Rick Steed's when you go over there? Or do you do it and then tell them later, or never at all? Or how do you do this?
That's a great question.
Are you getting me to say this?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I could tell you there's, I guess, several parts of that question. First of all, how are our books written, or maybe what's the philosophy running through our books? It's funny. I was just talking with Rick about this yesterday. I think right now in the travel industry, there's a fair amount of fluff. I mean, I think, you know, when you look at maybe a lot of travel magazines or guidebooks or TV shows, it's about, you know, competitive poker in Las Vegas or luxury hotels in Hawaii. But that's not really how the majority of Americans travel. And I think Rick is sort of realizing that the reason why his work resonates with people is because it's kind of no nonsense. It's kind of targeting kind of the majority of Americans, the way they are traveling, the things they're interested in, the budget that they have at their disposal. And also we kind of cut through a lot of the niceties and the platitudes and the fluff and give really hard facts and opinions. We really pride ourselves on pinning down the specific information to help someone have a good trip. And also to give people advice about, you know, hey, this is, you know, this museum is very famous, but it's kind of overrated, so don't feel like you have to spend the whole day here. We don't hesitate to give people hard advice, and in a way that I think is a little unusual. We're not trying to promote a place, a museum, a town, a hotel. We're going there as impartially as possible and trying to tell the reader what our experience was and what we think might be their experience as well. Now, to facilitate that, to answer the second part of your question, I would say most of the time that first of all, another part of why our books have that approach is that they're very meticulously researched in person. Rick actually goes himself, spends about 3 months a year, I would say, in Europe doing nothing but researching guidebooks. That's not even counting his time producing TV. And I go, for example, for about 2 months a year researching guidebooks, and we have a staff of probably 10 other guidebook researchers who also spend a lot of time updating our books each year, ranging in time from 1 to 3 weeks, most of them. And we personally, and this is something that I think we say this and people don't quite believe it, but it's true, we personally go to every single hotel, restaurant, laundromat, internet cafe, tourist office, train station. We try out everything that we advise in the book, make sure that it still works, and if it doesn't, we figure out what's wrong with it, we fix it. And I think that personal attention is unusual in guidebook publishing. There are obviously a lot of great travel writers out there who really work hard to put out good guidebooks, but it's pretty expensive to update a book the way that we do it, and I think a lot of people rely on telephone, fax, email, that sort of thing, or hearsay even, to get things up to date. And we really have a kind of a strict ethic of doing it in person and making sure it's done right. So I think that's something else that, you know, the proof is in the pudding, and we spend all this hard work doing it, and people, whether they realize this is why or not, they like our books because they're accurate, because you can sense that a real person has actually gone before you and done this stuff to make sure that it all works. Another part of your question about do people know what we're up to? Most of the time, we try to go incognito, you could say. Well, I should start by saying part of our research philosophy is that we always want to have the same experience that someone reading the book is. We don't want to have special treatment. We don't want to be schmoozed by the tourist board. We want to have the exact experience that our readers will, because that's the only way we'll find out what the real situation is and how we can advise them best. So, for example, if I'm evaluating a hotel to decide whether to recommend it in the book, For the most part, I'll usually go in and just pretend I'm a tourist, and I'll say, hey, can I see a room? Oh, yeah, what's the price? I'll poke around a little bit. I'll think, you know, is this the kind of place that I would want to spend my money if I were traveling to stay here? And then if I like what I see, then I'll tell them who I am, and then I'll get them a little more information out of them that way. But that's sort of the crucial first impression. We, as much as possible, we try to do that incognito so that we're not being shown only the very best room in that hotel. We want to see the hotel room that the tourist who stumbles in off the street in the middle of the day and asks for a last-minute room sees. You know, for example, we'll ask them we want a room for one night because they're going to probably show us not their best room if they know it's only for one night, for instance. And that can tell you a lot. And we do the same when we're updating, too, not just for new places, but when I'm updating a list of 10 hotels, I'll actually do the same with them. I'll go in and kind of get a sense of what this place is like, make sure that our listing is describing it accurately. And then only after I've kind of gotten my opinion set, well, I tell them who I am and then kind of go through the sort of the detail checking part of asking them to confirm the prices and the phone number and all this sort of thing.
Brilliant. I mean, that, I know when my wife and I travel either together or independently, and we've used our these books, you can really tell that somebody is talking and writing that has done it. It comes across very well, and I'm glad that you mentioned it. And I want to ask another thing about, I know you're the co-author of several books, and let's take, for example, the Croatia and Slovenia guidebooks that you're co-authoring. Can you, because I imagine most of the authors do very similar to meet Rick's standards and requirements. Can you start, let's say, when you were asked to write this book, were you the first co-author of the book, or did you start the book?
Yeah, that's right.
Let's say Rick calls you in and says, we want you to write a guidebook on Croatia and Slovenia. Can you, in just a short time, give it the process of how you write the books?
Well, sure.
Can you get more of an idea?
Yeah, that's a great idea. Yeah, so for example, I wrote that book last summer, so it's been on the shelves for about a year, and we just actually, literally yesterday, I mailed to our publisher the second edition, which will come out sometime in March, I believe. So it's kind of a long process. The first thing is Rick is only going to do a book about a destination that he's enthusiastic about. In some cases, if it's a place that he doesn't have as much expertise about or as maybe enough time that he would like to devote to be able to write the book himself, he will arrange with a co-author like me to do the majority of the work for him, but he's still very much involved in setting up the table of contents and going over and actually checking out the material in most cases.
Mm-hmm.
And there's only a few of us co-authors, and it's a great relationship that we have with Rick because we can kind of write a little bit in his voice and we know kind of what he's looking for. It really is, I think, still a Rick Steves book because we've all traveled extensively personally with Rick and really know what he's looking for, and we've learned all his tricks for how to get the best information and write the best guidebooks. And so then what we'll do is first we'll come up with a table of contents. We'll get a feeling of what should be covered, what's worth listing in the book. That's something else that's, I think, a little different about our books from many others. We're very, very selective. Some would say we're too selective. A lot of guidebooks try to be comprehensive. And, for example, if there's any city with at least 500,000 people, you have to have at least 3 pages on it. That's actually a rule of thumb, I think, at some guidebook publishers. And we have no such rules. It's based completely on what's worth someone's time, or at least our opinion of what's worth someone's time. These are very opinionated books, and I think that's another thing people like about them. But, you know, we looked at Croatia and said, which of these towns is worth me spending, you know, 1 day, 2 days, 3 days, etc. Let's figure out our priorities for how much coverage we want of each of the main destinations and what doesn't make the cut. There's a few things that, you know, a lot of people might be going to in Croatia, but we frankly, having been there, don't feel that they're that exciting or that is worthwhile maybe as some others, and we leave them off. We come up with that table of contents, and then basically after that point, I kind of ran with it. I went through, set up an itinerary, actually went over and traveled, of course. That's the essential part there. Went over and traveled to all of these places. We, Rick and I, both like working with local guides, especially writing new material, because you've got somebody who's, first of all, whose job it is to know all of the right answers about history and, you know, the sort of the tour guide spiel for that town. But we also like taking advantage of the fact that this is a local person who lives there, and they know I wouldn't say exactly gossip, but they kind of know what the local scuttlebutt is, and they know kind of what right. people are talking about. They know that, for example, this restaurant that's in all the guidebooks is a complete tourist trap that no local person would go to, and hey, let's go around the corner to this other place that I like a lot better. So we rely a lot on local guides. But, you know, it's really a grind. I think some people might think writing guidebooks is a very glamorous job, and I certainly love my job, and I could never complain about any instant that I get to spend traveling. But it's really hard work. We've had a lot of people at our company who've tried it out for a season and came back and said, you know, I'm a great traveler. I love to travel, but I don't like traveling that way. That's just too hard. Basically, when we're writing or updating a guidebook, Rick or me or any of our other researchers, we are working 16 to 18-hour days. I mean, you wake up in the morning, you've got a list of 50 or 60 things that you need to check. That could be hotels, restaurants, museums, again, internet cafes, laundromats, all that sort of thing. You line them up, you use a map to figure out a logical order to visit them in, and you just hit the pavement, and you go all day and stop at each one of them, get the information. That's also kind of there's almost an art to getting good information from people, because especially in some situations, they're programmed to give you sort of the official line. But again, I think what people appreciate about our books is we kind of cut through that, and we want to know, yeah, I know that, you know, you say we're supposed to get reservations to go to this museum, but how does it really work? You know, if someone shows up at 9 o'clock right when you open, do you really have to have a reservation to get into this museum? So
I've seen David.
That's all part of it. Yep. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, and it's you catch a lot of frogs. That's the other part of it. If I'm writing a new guidebook chapter, I'll visit 30 hotels in a town, and people wonder, how do you know what's a good hotel and what isn't? You'd be surprised at the end of a busy day. At the end of the day, you can look back at all the hotels you visited, and it's pretty obvious which are the better hotels or the better value hotels for the price. So you kind of maybe go to 30 and you keep 10 or something like that. Guess a lot of frogs. Rick and I had a sort of frustrating day in Croatia this past year. He was going to check out some of the material I'd written last year. We were up in Istria, which is this really wonderful northern part of Croatia. That's kind of, it garners a lot of comparisons to sort of Tuscany, although it's a bit of an overstatement. It's got sort of rolling hills and vineyards and olive oil and hill towns and this sort of thing. And we wanted to kind of flesh it out a little bit, improve it, add a few more hill towns and agriturismos, which is something that's more associated with Italy, but they also have them in Istria. And he and I spent about 4 hours driving around Istria, running down leads for great tourist farms or agriturismos. And it was a whole day of kissing frogs. And at the end of about a four-hour research trip, we kind of looked at each other and said, man, that was a waste of time. We did not find any that were worth listing in our book. And on the one hand, we were both kind of disappointed. We're both kind of efficiency freaks. You know, you want to make the most of every instant you have there. But we had to kind of take a step back and say, you know what, this is what writing a guidebook is. It's kissing a lot of frogs. And maybe that perfect agriturismo is right around the next corner, or maybe not. But you're not going to know unless you check it out. It's pretty much, you know, when I'm not sleeping, I'm working when I'm over there. It's a lot of hard work. But it pays off, because when you do find that gem, when you do find that perfect hotel or restaurant, or when you have a great day with a local guide who really knows their stuff and is also just a wealth of local information, it's just a great feeling. And to know that the following year and for the years to come, thousands of your guidebook readers are going to be able to take advantage of your hard work is really, really satisfying.
Oh, I know. Yeah. Let me ask this question, because you mentioned local guides, and that's what I highly recommend, and that's what we recommend in Travel Advice. In the guidebooks, do you recommend this? Do you ever recommend where to find them? And
absolutely.
What price you should do?
Absolutely. And, you know, the other thing about our books is, what you see is exactly what we did there. So Rick says, for example, sometimes, you know, it would probably be, a case could be made to be totally consistent. In other words, you list the same kind of information in every town. But we don't really try to do that, because it wouldn't be really genuine. It would be forced. And Rick always says, if there's a listing for a masseuse in a town, that means that Rick was tired the day that he was there and needed to get a massage, you know. If there's a listing for a laundromat in town, it's because it was the day that Rick ran out of clean clothes and had to do some more washing, you know. And it's the same with local guides. If we have a really great local guide that we work with, we immediately put them in the book with the prices and phone number and email address so people can have the same experience we did. So what's kind of funny, because people don't realize it, but when they're using a Rick Steves book, they're actually having the same experience that Rick or one of his researchers did in that same place. You know, if there's a restaurant that Rick raves about, it's because he ate there and he loved it. And people maybe, I think people kind of get a kick out of knowing that there's this person behind the book that actually does this stuff. Local guides, that's a great example of something that we'd love to put in the book if we find a good one. And there are local guides in Europe now who, just by pure chance, we ended up working with them. Maybe we called the tourist office and said, hey, give me the phone number of your best local guide. Met this person and fell in love with this person, and we put them in the book, and now they get basically are kept entirely in business by people using our book. And that's very satisfying for us, because we know that this is a great guide. We know that our readers want to find a great guide, and to be able to be that intermediary to put those the guide with the people, or it could be a hotel or it could be a restaurant. It's a really good feeling, and it gives us a lot of pleasure to see these people connecting. That's kind of what we do.
One thing I wanted to mention, and you also have inferred it, but on your guidebooks, and you mentioned you wrote Croatia last year and is updated this year, and are all the books updated every year or every 2 years or whenever? Is it a schedule?
Something that in the past has been very unusual about our company is we have in the past always updated every book every year. Unfortunately, that's going to change. Not maybe unfortunately, but it's just the nature of the business. That's going to change in the next year or so. From now on, starting in 2008, about a third of our books are going to become biannuals, which means we're going to update them in person only every other year, and that's a big change for us. That's a very recent thing, and it's come simply because we expand our series every year or so, and we've gotten to the point where we can't physically update, or more importantly, we can't edit and publish and produce all of our guidebooks every year. This is something we've been talking about with our publisher for a while. And there comes a point where our books start coming out in August, and then they keep coming out, the new editions, until we get through them all. And that used to be that they'd all come out before, say, December, and then it was January, and then it was February, and then it was March. Well, there's an obvious problem with a guidebook on Croatia that's called Croatia 2008 that comes out in March of 2008. You're missing the first 3 months, and you're also missing the last few months of 2007 when people are starting to plan ahead. So we got to the point where we just said, you know, we tried to kind of streamline our process and put them out quicker, but we decided, you know, we'd rather make sure that the books are keeping the same quality. We don't want to sacrifice the quality just to get them out faster. So we want to make sure the books keep the same quality that people have come to trust, and the sacrifice or the compromises that they're going to have to, some of them are going to have to come out a little less frequently. I don't think we'd ever go beyond that 2 year mark. I think that it'll always be at least every 2 years. And it's only about a third of our books that are going to biannuals. So all of the top sellers, the main destinations, the France books, Italy books, Britain, Spain, let's see, what else, Ireland, those titles are all going to remain annual for the near future. Yeah, France, all of, and not just France, but all the France books, so France, Paris, Provence, right. And in Italy it would be, you know, the Venice book, the Rome book, the Florence book, and the Italy book. So that's kind of a recent change, kind of a growing pain that we're experiencing. What convinced us that was okay is 5 or 10 years ago, the books were relatively new, and there was a lot left to do to improve them and kind of get them good, get them right. And I think what Rick and I and all of our researchers are finding is when we go over there now, we try to update, we try to improve, and we find that, not to be immodest, but there's not too much we can do anymore to expand or to improve. The stuff is pretty solid after years and years of annual attention. And I think that's sort of Rick has said to me, you know, ideally, you don't update a guidebook once a year. You update it every, let's say, year and a half. And he's right. If you go after exactly 1 year, you'd be surprised how little has changed. If you go 2 years, maybe a little more, it'd be nice to do it a little bit earlier than that. A year and a half would be sort of ideal. But, of course, because we're sort of slaves to the guidebook publishing timetable, and if we were doing books every year and a half, we'd have to be researching them in December and January and February, which would not be, is a little bit more difficult time to do research. We try to do all our research in the summer because that's when people are actually traveling. Right. So this is sort of a compromise to allow us to keep the same level of quality without, you know, having books on the shelves mm-hmm. for less time than they should be.
Let me ask one final question. Do you, well, I'm sure you do, get hundreds probably of emails, letters, phone calls, et cetera, of people who've used your book and make additional recommendations, oh, I saw this, or this is there, or whatever. Do you take that into consideration?
Absolutely. That's a really important part of what we do and how we find new information. We say in the book, you know, they can email us, or they can send us a letter, or now we have a form on our website that they can fill out to sort of give us a rundown of their experiences, ricksteves.com/feedback, I think it is. And we say, you know, we read this and value this feedback, and it's true. I would say every bit of feedback we get passes across at least one person's desk. Somebody lays eyes on every single piece of feedback we get. Rick personally actually looks at an amazing amount of it. I can't believe how much time he's able to look, because we do get, over the course of a year, thousands and thousands of letters or emails or feedback, mm-hmm. bits of feedback. But it does get read and processed, and it's kind of a tricky game because as a researcher I've learned you have to take it with a grain of salt. Occasionally someone will recommend something highly and I'll go check it out and it'll be a total dud and kind of a waste of my time. Mm-hmm. But then this year, for example, I just got back a couple months ago from a trip updating my Eastern Europe book, and I found probably 3 or 4 fantastic new hotels scattered around Eastern Europe that are just top-notch, that really in some ways are even better than what we'd already listed for those destinations. And I never would have found them if I hadn't gotten these letters. So we really value that and take it seriously. And it can be some of the best leads that we get. And if we ever get mm-hmm. a complaint about a place, if someone says, oh, this place overcharged me, or did you know that they just put in a disco on the ground floor and you can't get to sleep till 3 a.m, that's something that we take particularly seriously for something that's already in the book. And we always make a note for our researcher to address that, to check it out, to see if it's something we need to make adjustments about. Mm-hmm. And that's also a great way for us to find out ways that we can improve and more accurately describe what's covered in the book.
Well, Cameron, would you please give us a website where our listeners can order the books?
You bet. Probably the easiest place is just to go to the Rick Steves homepage, www.ricksteves.com. That's kind of a tricky name. It's RickSteV, as in Victor, ES.com, like the man's name Steve with an S on the end, ricksteves.com.
Mm-hmm.
And there you'll find information all about our company, but one of the links there on the homepage is about our guidebooks. And if you go into that site, you can learn more about how our books are written, what we cover, and also links to our travel store to buy some books for yourself.
We cannot thank you enough. This has been extremely informative.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah.
Great. Thank you very much for having me.